This is Kevin Harlan. This Friday, the NBA on Prime crew and I are back with another exciting Emirates NBA Cup doubleheader. First, Bam Adebayo and the Heat take on Jalen Brunson and the Knicks. Then, Steph Curry and the Warriors square off against Wemby and the Spurs. If you're not a Prime member, just sign up for a free 30-day trial. Heat Knicks, Warriors Spurs. Coverage starts Friday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, only on Prime. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/Amazon Prime for details.
Du bist ein Raider, der sich unter der Erde niedergelassen hat. Doch jetzt musst du an die Oberfläche zurückkehren. Dorthin, wo die Ark-Maschinen umherstreifen. Wenn du mutig genug bist, wer weiß, was du da oben findest. Ark Raiders. Ein Multiplayer-Extraction-Abenteuer-Videospiel. Jetzt erhältlich für PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X und S sowie PC.
Will they find a home? Sponsored by Geico. Jane doesn't mind an apartment with no elevator.
5 flights of stairs is 5 flights of cardio.
Bob is a little less enthusiastic about stairs.
I hate stairs.
Compromise is tough, but these two won't have to compromise when they bundle renters and car insurance with Geico. It's easy, and they could save even more. In the end, Jane and Bob found an apartment that's a 4-story walk-up. And Bob?
Yeah, there's a freight elevator she doesn't know about.
What were you talking about?
Nothing.
Bundling without compromise at Geico.com.
From the basement of the Bob and Tom Studios, it's That Josh Arnold Podcast. Oh, hello. My goodness. What is it? Second week of Feb? Sure is. Man, oh man. We're in the thick of it now, aren't we? Winter has us in its icy clutch. But that's all right. Let's warm each other up, shall we? Oh, boy, is this show hot today. Mostly because of our guest. Man, oh, man. One of my favorite people, my guest this week, it's you! Oh, how are you? My goodness, it's great to see you. You're looking good. I hope you're feeling good as well. And I'm in a pretty good mood because that lady isn't down here today in the basement. I saw her upstairs earlier, and I was like, oh, well, she's here. I guess she'll be working while I'm trying to podcast. But she's not down here right now, so that's good. I feel unencumbered. So that's how one should feel if they're doing a podcast, I say. No limitations. Just be yourself, and I have no advice. I have no business giving advice on podcasts. I'm still trying to figure out my own. So I am thrilled that you're here. If it's your first time, welcome. If it's not, my goodness, thank you for returning. We have a great sponsor for the podcast this week, an important one, particularly in most of the country this time of year. Our sponsor this week, a coat. Oh, boy, you need one, don't you? When it gets cold out, you got to wrap yourself up in a nice warm coat. Oh, boy, because that's what they do, don't they? They provide warmth for our bodies in the colder temps. And, well, that's not all they offer. They can be quite stylish, can't they? They can look good. You don't want an ugly coat. You want a nice-looking coat. Of course, when it comes to coats, I always say, function over form. If it's warm and ugly, that sure beats a coat that doesn't keep you warm but looks good. So what else can coats do for you? They can, well, if you're shoplifting, they can hide some of the items that you're taking out of the store, because coats can be bulky and can hide bulkier items. You know, you don't want to shoplift in a tank top. You want to wear a big coat. So I would imagine shoplifting in the winter goes up for that reason. I don't know this to be true. It's just my guess. So anyway, enjoy a coat this week. I hope you do. I know I will. And something else that I will enjoy is this week's word. Boy, oh boy, it comes to us from a listener, and it's a wild one. It's good. I think without further ado, let's bundle up in our coats, hop on the old train here, and head on to Vocabulary Station. Boy, always nice to get on board there, and here we are. And Stephen Grimes sent this word in. Now, this word actually begs for its own segment in a way, and I'll explain. It's a phobia, and we all know that phobias have really bizarre, long sort of names, and they usually end in phobia. So I could start a separate segment for phobias. That might be kind of fun to do every now and again. Because there are so many out there, and they're usually bizarre. And but hey, that's sort of the nature of phobias, isn't it? They're not always logical. They're just a fear of something for whatever reason. And this one I really like because Steven's 10-year-old son, Aiden, it says here, delights in telling people that he has this phobia. And I've heard of this. I personally don't have it, but I know a couple people that do. It's brumotactylophobia. Brumotactylophobia. So you might be able to pick out some of the root words there. Well, phobia, of course. Tactile. So having to deal with touching or feeling, that sort of thing. The brumo, I haven't looked up. I don't know what that means. But the definition of this phobia, it's the fear of food touching other food. So you probably know somebody that has, whether it be a slight or severe case of brumotactylophobia, where they, on their plate, they do not want the corn to touch the mashed potatoes, and they don't want the mashed potatoes to touch the roast beef or whatever, you know, whatever's going on there. They don't want things to touch. Their food has to be kept separate. In fact, maybe you know somebody with brumotactylophobia who have those segmented plates where they're like little compartments, like a TV dinner tray type thing, so that their food won't touch. It's pretty fascinating. And I love that Aiden goes around and he says, you know, I have brumotactylophobia. And I bet he does delight in telling people that because he can pronounce such a gigantic word and they don't know what it is. So he gets to teach them something. How cool. Good for you, Aiden. And I wonder, though, if people with severe brumotactylophobia can have a cheeseburger where it's a bun with a meat and cheese and maybe lettuce and tomato and onion and stuff. Does that bother them? Or pizza with the crust and the toppings and the sauce and the cheese, can they have their foods touching if it's the same, you know, if it creates a one item, essentially? If you have brumotactylophobia or you know somebody who does, let me know if they have to eat, what is that called? Some restaurants will do this where they will have a... I cannot remember the word, but it essentially means, deconstructed. Like you can get like deconstructed cheeseburger and it'll be everything that makes up a cheeseburger, but it's all separated. I went to a place and they had deconstructed chicken pot pie or something. It was either a chicken stew type thing or a pot pie, and it was everything that would be in there, but it just wasn't all together. And I had a recipe for a deconstructed chili, which was pretty good. I wonder if those with brumotactylophobia, I guess it depends on how severe it is, if they can't enjoy a cheeseburger put together. So, yeah, I think we'll do that. I think we'll keep Vocabulary Station separate from, phobia, what could we call it? Phobia Junction or something. So I'll work on that. And that might be interesting to sort of explore those. And of course, never to judge those with the phobias, but to just to discuss them. Interesting. I don't think this is considered brumotactylophobia, the thing I have when it comes to food. I think it's just a pet peeve of mine. when somebody gives me a tin or a bag or whatever of Christmas cookies and they combine the flavors of the cookies in the one tin or the one bag. And then you get cookies that end up tasting all the same, and they're not, they don't taste like what they're supposed to be. They just taste like a mixture of everything. I don't care for that. I like my cookies to be separated and sealed in different containers so that the chocolate chip tastes like the chocolate chip and the snickerdoodle tastes like the snickerdoodle. It's not that they're mixed up. I hate when they're mixed up because then you get like these two half-assed flavored cookies. Boo, I say. And you know what I do? I pour the tin out in front of the person who gave it to me. And I usually just I step on the cookies. So I'm just letting you know. That's what happens. I go, oh, thank you. And I'm still very polite about it, though. And that's what throws them. I go, oh, my gosh, thank you so much. As I'm pouring the tin over and they're falling onto the ground. These, oh, my gosh, these look delicious. And I'm stepping on them as I'm saying these things. So they kind of don't know how to react. Yes, I'll be honest. I've never done that, but I'm going to, because the idea of that gives me so much joy. And I'll make sure it's somebody who can handle it. You know what I mean? If it's one of my brothers or something giving me, although they all know one of my brother John, one of his ex-girlfriends used to make us the most delicious Christmas cookies, but she would ruin it by throwing them all in the same Ziploc bag, and I would yell at her every year. And one year, I didn't pour them out and step on them, but I certainly turned them down. I said, you know what? Keep these. I'm telling you right now, I'm not going to eat them. You've ruined them by mixing them. And I was laughing, and she was kind of laughing and annoyed at the same time, and she said, fine, I'm happy not to give you my good cookies. So it all worked out for everybody. So thank you, Stephen and Aiden, for that terrific word and for, well, being the impetus for a potential new segment on That Josh Arnold Podcast. And that's something I think I'm going to do. I'm going to start introducing some newer segments, and maybe we'll eventually get to like 10 or 12, and they'll kind of change each week. It won't be the same. Now, I'm not saying that we won't get Vocabulary Station every week, because heck, I mean, boy, oh boy, that can't go anywhere. That's become, well, so popular that it would just be foolish to take that off of the weekly podcast. But, well, you know what? I don't know. Maybe we'll have, I'll keep everything that I've had so far. Do you guys like this? Do you like that I'm discussing on the podcast what I could do with the podcast? Is that stuff I could just be thinking about silently before or after? Anyway, I think maybe I'll keep everything that's here now, and I'll just add in another segment, but that'll be a rotating segment. So some weeks it'll be a phobia, and other weeks it'll be whatever. So you know what? We'll figure this out together, all right? I appreciate you being with me during this, these rocky times. But you know what? I certainly enjoyed getting that submission from the Grimeses. And, you know what else I enjoy? I don't know what I'm waiting for. I'm going to tell you about it right now, what I enjoyed this week. Oh! Now look at this. It's a chocolate chip cookie with arms and legs, and boy, oh boy, is he happy. He's hopping down the road there. And here comes a beautiful snickerdoodle. Oh, she looks lovely. And, yes. They meet up and they hold hands and they walk down the street together. And I'll tell you what, it's a good thing they did. Because I'd be tempted to eat them both. But so now that they're mixed like that, I'm not going to do it. Because their flavors are too intertwined. So you go on there, cookies, and you you enjoy yourselves. You're safe for the time being. What I enjoyed this week, it turns out, Ace Cosby and Chick McGee also enjoyed this week. I was talking to them about it, and they also are fans of a new TV show. I saw commercials for it, starting maybe a month or so ago, and I went, man. This looks like it might be right up my alley. And lo and behold, after two episodes, if it isn't like appointment television for me now, I'm thoroughly entertained by it so far, and I think it can only I think it's got legs. Resident Alien, it's called, on the Sci-Fi Channel, and it is wonderfully entertaining. There have been two episodes so far. I believe it airs on Wednesday nights. When I say appointment television, I mean I DVR it and then watch it the next day. So it's one of those things where, you know, you have a lot of stuff on your DVR that you're just like, oh, yeah, I need to watch that. Well, this show for me is as soon as I realize, I remember, oh, yeah, I recorded that last night, I'm watching it. So Resident Alien, it stars the great Alan Tudyk, who some of you may know as Pirate Steve from Dodgeball, or is it the Dread Pirate Steve? I've never understood why, if you're a pirate, why you wouldn't automatically go by the Dread Pirates. If you're going to, I mean, make it sound as cool as possible. Don't just be pirate, be Dread, the Dread Pirate. The Dread Pirate Josh is who I am. I'm not Pirate Josh. I want the name, my name to fill people with dread, to know that when I'm around, they're really going to get pirated. And there's no bones about it. So anyway, Alan Tudyk, a great actor. He's one of those guys that's a chameleon. He can play anything. He can do any accent. He can do comedy, drama. He's in a terrific horror comedy called Dale and Tucker. Is it Versus Evil? I'm so sorry that I'm forgetting the second half of the title after raving about it. Dale and Tucker. Sorry, I'm typing it into IMDb as we speak. Tucker and Dale Versus Evil. Sorry. And it's a very funny movie. But anyway, I'm talking right now about his new show, Resident Alien, on Sci-Fi. It's a comedy, drama, mystery. It's got all these wonderful elements, and it's so well cast and performed and executed. It's essential. He's an alien, isn't he? And he has metamorphosized himself into the body of a guy who used to vacation in this small Colorado town. And now he's there to stay because he's a doctor. The human was a doctor. The alien has now taken his place, all right? So he has to now be the town doctor because the town doctor has been murdered. And they go to him and they say, hey, we need you to figure out, how this doctor was killed and who did it, but we also need you to be the town doctor. And so a lot of wonderfully funny scenarios occur, and a lot of quirky characters and great stuff. And there's some good drama in there, and it is a kind of a fun murder mystery so far. So I really encourage you to check this show out. At least give it a shot. If you don't care for it, that's fine. I would never tell you that you're wrong. It's but I sure am getting a kick out of it so far. Resident Alien. I'm sure it's on demand or whatever, or they'll be showing reruns and whatnot. But yeah, try to give it a look. It's a good time. This week is, we've got a couple things going on, don't we? We have Valentine's Day, which I'll talk a little bit about in a moment. But also, Friday marks the Lunar New Year, or the Chinese New Year. And I have been lucky enough to really celebrate a Chinese New Year when I lived in South Korea, when I was a teacher over there. The Korean New Year is pretty close to the Chinese New Year. Typically, the Chinese New Year falls on the first new moon that happens between January 21st and February 20th. So whenever the new moon is, so this year it happens to be on Friday, February 12th. And I think the Korean New Year, I should have looked this up. I do think it's the second new moon that falls on. So they're pretty close to each other. But there's also a large population of Chinese people in Korea and even many Koreans who celebrate a lot of Chinese traditions. So Chinese New Year was a thing. And it was a fun celebration. Typically on, I guess what we would call Chinese New Year's Eve, the night before the Chinese New Year, families would get together and have a big meal and exchange red packets or red envelopes. I don't remember the Chinese word for them, but they would often exchange. There'd be a certain amount of money in there. And it's an interesting tradition. Actually, married couples would give these red packets to, or they do give these red packets to an unmarried person. And there'd be money in there, which was meant to signify good luck and happiness for the year. And they would have a very nice dinner. And then, you know, for a few days, there's just a nice celebration filled with flowers. And the color red is very prominent in these celebrations. And fireworks. And there was a moment. This image has stuck with me for years. And I know it's an image I'll hold on to for the rest of my life. I was teaching on the Chinese New Year, or at least it was, we may have had that day off. I don't quite remember. It was certainly on the day of a big Chinese New Year celebration. And I taught pretty much all day. And so my last class was at night. And it got out around, I don't remember if it was 9 p.m. or closer to 10 p.m., but around there. And the class got out, and all day it had been snowing very heavily. Huge flakes, the kind of flakes that just instantly blanket the ground. And boy, was it, I mean, they were coming down. This was as heavy a snow as I've ever been in, and it was beautiful. All day, it was great. And we still had classes. They really did not cancel classes. The weather had to be so bad for them to cancel classes there. And this, although it was just a heck of a snowstorm, was not big enough for them to cancel the classes. So anyway, it was fine. It was fine. So it was just gorgeous. And night fell, my last class ended, and I was looking out the window at the snowfall. The city was pretty lit up. A lot of buildings where I was, and so there were a lot of lights on the buildings. So you could see pretty well, and you could just see these gigantic, beautiful snowflakes falling on inches of already fallen snow. And I was just sort of admiring it. And there were, you know, mountains in the background, it was just really cool. And all of a sudden, because of this Chinese New Year celebration, one of the largest fireworks displays I've ever seen began. And to see a fireworks display in a snowstorm was something I'd never seen. It was something I hadn't even considered, really, that it was something I could see. And it was as beautiful a thing as I've ever seen. Just the snow falling and the fireworks exploding and lighting up all the snow and still and also being kind of covered by the snow, so you couldn't they weren't as clear as they would be, say on a nice summer night or something, but they kind of reflected in the falling snowflakes, and just the mixture of the snow and the fireworks was stunning. And I sat there and watched the whole, I stood there rather, at the window of the third story of the school, just staring out at it and just in awe for 25 minutes or however long the display lasted. I just watched the whole thing. And it was also, the sound was amazing because, you know, when snow falls, particularly heavy snow, things really quiet down to where you can even kind of hear. You kind of feel like you can hear the snow landing, don't you? Like there's sort of a crispness or a light rustling during a big snowstorm like that. And so that light rustling and that crispness would be shattered at times by the sound of the explosions, which would, of course, occur just after the flash, you know? I that is an image that I keep in my brain and in my heart and I will hold very closely for the rest of my life. I had been in Korea for a little under a year at that point, and I was considering whether or not I should sign on for another year or if I should go home. So to be watching that fireworks display at somewhat of a crossroads for me was really special. And I would, you know, I don't remember thinking at that moment, coming to a decision right at that moment. But I bet that image had something to do with me signing on for another year. And that first year had gone so quickly, and I had seen so many things wanted to see more over there. And that, a fireworks display in one of the biggest snowstorms I've ever been in, certainly didn't hurt the idea of staying there a little longer. So I just wanted to share that with you. The Chinese New Year, I love our New Year. I love the traditions we have. And I'm sure with some American New Year's Eves, it's been snowing somewhere and they've had fireworks displays. I've just never seen it. This was a fire. I feel like, though, under, I don't know, other circumstances, that fireworks display would have been canceled because, hey, maybe the fireworks will get too soggy and not go off, or who's going to be here to watch them? That's always the concern. Can you shoot off fireworks in the rain? Yeah, I mean, I guess some will be successful, but the thing is the people who are going to go watch them aren't there, so do you still shoot them off? In this case, they didn't care. They were shooting those things off, and man, how cool. The snow did not stop the celebration, and in fact, it may have enhanced it. It certainly made for a cool moment for me. And then after the display, I I also did something that I had never done before. I got on my bike and rode home. And here's what actually happened. I got on my bike, rode for about, maybe just across the street in 8 inches at that point or something. I mean, it was a lot of snow. Realized it was nigh impossible. And then ended up walking my bike home the rest of the way. I loved my bike in Korea, man. I loved it. I lived there for a few months and saw that there were so many people on bikes. And it was pretty easy to get around in that town. The taxis were cheap and plentiful. And tipping was not a thing. So to get across town, it would cost me $3. I often tipped, even though occasionally it caused fights because it was so uncommon that there were times where I think some of the drivers were like insulted by it. You're a cab driver, you probably need extra money, which was not at all what my intention was. But you didn't have to tip, and if you did, sometimes it was met with gratitude. Other times it was not. And it was easy to get around. But the traffic was kind of rough. Things would get snarled, and the driving was, some of those rides were white knuckle. I mean, traffic laws were a suggestion there, not hard and fast laws. There were some. I mean, I remember being in one cab that, in order to get around a car, got on the sidewalk, and I'm not making that up. And people just sort of got out of the way, and there was some honking, and he he went slow, but he was still on the sidewalk. So, anyway. Anyway, I decided that I wanted a bike, and I thought, hell, it would be fun anyway, and some good exercise to get a bike. So I ended up buying a bike there, and I rode that thing all over and loved it. I lived close to a river, and there was a nice bike trail along the river. And man, I remember going, I just picked a direction the first time I went on that trail, and when I can go right or left, and I went left and rode for miles. And I wasn't, have you ever walked or hiked or ridden a bike or whatever, or even driven in a place you don't know, and you get to a certain point and you go, I better turn back because I have no idea where I'm at. And I also don't have the communication skills. I don't speak enough Korean to ask how do I get back. But in this case, well, it was a pretty straight trail that just went along the river. I just knew, hey, if I turn around, I'm eventually gonna run back into my apartment building. So it wasn't, but I went far enough to kind of get a little concerned, even though I knew damn well how to get back. But it was great having a bike. And so a couple of my friends over there bought motor scooters, bad motor scooters, if you're a Montrose fan. man, they had those, and those looked like they were so fun. And I never bit the bullet and got one. You could get them for like $600 and just tool around town on a little scooter. Oh, they did look fun. But I just got the traditional bike. And one time, I remember, I'm still baffled as to how I did not pass away on this day. Because here's what happened. I would take this bike everywhere, and I got pretty good on it to where I could go a fair distance without holding onto the handlebars. I could go a fair distance carrying things and still being able to ride the bike just fine. So I went up to the corner market for my apartment complex, and I was being particularly lazy because it wasn't a long walk. But I went, hell with it, I'm going to take my bike. So I ride my bike up there, and I get like six plastic bags of groceries and some heavy things or whatever, milk and beer. The beer over there, most of it came in, you could get it in cans and bottles, but at grocery stores, most of it came in 2-liter plastic bottles. So I had a couple 2-liter plastic bottles of beer. just your typical grocery stuff. And I went, okay, I'll try to balance this while I'm on the bike. I'll put 3 bags on one side, one in one hand, and 3 bags in the other, and I'll attach them I'll hang 3 bags from either side of the handlebars. And that should balance things out, and then I can just take the short trip to my apartment. There was a little bit of danger because there were speed bumps, so I would have to maneuver those. And on the way back from the market, it was mostly downhill. So I balance out the bags as well, as best I think I can on the handlebars. And I'm holding on to... there's threat of them sliding off. So what I do, unwisely, but at the time I thought was a good idea, I stuck my fingers underneath the plastic straps so that the weight of the bags was holding my fingers down to the handlebars. And I just sort of intertwined my fingers with the straps of the bag so that nothing could slip out. My hands weren't going to fly off the handlebars. But what that did was essentially handcuffed me to the handlebars, which you wouldn't think was a problem until I'm going a lot faster down the hill than I thought because I didn't take into account that the heavy groceries were going to make me go faster. So I hit a speed bump way harder than I ever had before and had planned. And that causes me to lose complete control of the bike. And I still don't know how this happened. I like to think, well, I'll just tell you what happened and then I'll tell you what I think happened. The bike starts going out of control. It's wobbling like crazy. And somehow I don't wipe out. I don't fall to the side. I don't flip. Nothing like that. I'm able to, as I'm speeding down this small road with these groceries on this bike and wobbling like crazy, somehow I was able to simply swing my left leg over the middle of the bike, the bar there, and while lifting up my hands, I somehow grip the plastic straps of the bags. So at the same time, so I swing my leg over, I grab the bags, and I'm not making this up. I just stepped off the bike and walked three steps and just stood there and watched my bike careen out of control and hit a tree. I don't know how I did it. I'm still quite confused by it. I'm not a coordinated man. I think there was some divine intervention here. I think looked down and went, this guy needs some help, and kind of grabbed me by the back of the shirt and helped lift me off that bike and set me on my way. I don't know how I wasn't, at the very least, a little hurt. There was nothing. And the groceries, I got them off the handlebars in a half a second, and none of those broke. Because in my head for a second there, I went, I'm going to be severely hurt, and all my groceries are going to be destroyed. So it was like a terrible situation. None of that happened. I somehow was overcome with the amount of grace and steadiness and skill it required for me to swing my one leg over, lift the groceries, and just step off the bike. And then kind of, quickly walk like three steps from the momentum and then just stand there and watch my bike crash. I'm still baffled. This wasn't really, this was sort of pre-cell phone video camera. So, because as soon as I was wobbling, and I wobbled for a while on this thing, and by a while, it could have been 20 feet, but it felt like forever. And I'd like to think that had there been video cameras on phones at the time, people would have recorded it, and we could have seen exactly how I did this. And then I would have also had evidence of this split second of complete and utter coordination, which I never have. The bike, boy, did it slam into that tree, but it was fine. And I picked it up and did not thumb my nose at fate. I walked my bike back to the apartment and and the groceries, and everything was fine. And I still get a little nervous telling it, because I thought for sure multiple broken bones. Oh, I would have loved to have seen it. I would have loved to have seen it happen. But hey, I lived it. I guess it was quite a thrill. I loved that bike, and I would the kids loved it too. My students couldn't believe how funny it was when they would see me pedaling up to the school. They just howled watching this gigantic American on this little mountain bike just wheel up and pull out my chain there and lock it up on the bike thing. And teacher! Oh, they would always call me teacher, and teacher, you ride a bike, and oh boy, they were overjoyed. And by the way, if I ever slip into that voice like I just did, please know that I'm not being insensitive. It's just that's how I hear it, and that's how it was said. And if I ever slip into that voice and I transpose the R and L's, please believe me that is a stereotype. For a reason, that is alive and well, folks. You may not want to hear it, but it's true. When I taught in Korea, I was invited to runch way more than I was invited to lunch. And that's just a fact. You can get mad about it if you want to. that's just something they do. And there's a good reason for it. In the Korean language, and so presumably in other Asian languages as well, the L and the R are that's like one letter in Korea. They don't have two separate letters for those. So that's why it's often transposed. So there's a reason for it, but I'm telling you, it happens a lot. So if you ever hear somebody do that, if they're being rude and making fun of somebody, well, then, yeah, of course. But the reality is that that's a thing. And, you know, so if I slip on, if I end up doing that, don't think I'm being insensitive. I'm actually being somewhat accurate, particularly with the people that I knew, who were my friends. And I would tease them. I'd go, you are teach. And they're, you know, Korean, I think, there were a couple male, but they were mostly female, the Korean teachers. And by that, I mean the teachers who were Korean. They, I would go, you know better. You're teaching this. It's not runch. And they'd laugh and tease me about my terrible, when I would try to speak Korean, they would, of course, make fun of me. It was fun. And I think we all became better speakers at both because we were teasing each other. So anyway, I loved riding my bike, and I would park it at the school when I would teach. And one day, a buddy of mine, a Canadian teacher, and I are walking out of the school. We're done for the day. Or maybe I had a couple hours off or whatever, and I was going to go wherever, to a restaurant or back to my apartment. And the parent of one of my students is outside, and she is a gorgeous mom. She's just beautiful. I mean, in fact, she was what you would call sexy. She was really, really hot. And we had seen her before, but and we'd always kind of been like, oh, man, I wish I knew the language. I could talk to her or whatever. Well, it turns out she spoke English, and she wanted to meet me. And so she came up, and she wanted to tell me how how much her son enjoyed my class and how much he was learning. And it was really nice to hear. So it was nice to hear. And I was now getting a chance to talk to this attractive woman. And so we start talking, and she has her car there, and I'm at my bike, you know, getting ready to unlock it. And it's raining a little bit outside. And she speaks very broken English, but we could understand each other. And so she would say things like, it rain. And I'd say, oh, yes, it is raining, and that sort of thing. And so she points to her car and very kindly says, can I ride you? Meaning, may I give you a lift to wherever you're going? And I'm able to keep my composure until I hear my buddy behind me do one of these. He's like, and I go, and she goes, can I ride you? Like, she said it again. And I kind of laugh or whatever. I can't help it. I'm sort of smiling. And I said, well, I've got my bike. So no, thank you. And she says, please, it rain. Can I ride you? And my buddy, I can tell, is losing it behind me, but trying to keep his composure. And I have to keep my composure for sure because I'm talking to this nice lady. And she wouldn't even know what we were laughing about anyway, I don't think. And so, but she's crazy hot. And so let's say somebody that you're really attracted to just came up to you and said, can I ride you? You would be, it might throw you off a little bit. And so that's what was happening here. And so... I kind of started playing up, trying to make my buddy laugh. So she said, can I ride you? And I said, you know, that sounds really nice. I would love for you to ride me, but I've got my bike here. And so he can't take it anymore. And he went back inside the school. And she asked me 6 or 7 times, can I ride you? And I was able to keep it together enough. And I said, no, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Your son's a good student, and it was nice meeting you. And she's like, okay. And so they left in her car, and I took the bike home or whatever. Language can be a funny thing. But that was also a thrill, having an attractive woman ask if she can ride me, even though she was asking, can I give you a ride? Which is fine. That's I wanted to say, and I joked with my buddy about it later, but I knew that it wouldn't make any sense to her or whatever, is when she said, can I ride you? I wanted to say, oh, you don't have to. Your son's already getting an A. And but that would have been just, it wouldn't have worked, I don't think. My buddy would have laughed, but anyway, that bike, I am sad to report, my bike that I loved so much when I was living in Korea, that I would ride around all the time to get places and sometimes for fun and exercise. I was in the best shape of my life when I lived in Korea. I was still fat, but I was in the best shape of my life. And I would go to bars and get drunk and then ride my bike home. And I did not realize, because in my head it was like, oh, this is a safer alternative. I mean, again, I could have gotten cabs, but this is a safer alternative than just trying to stumble home. I'll ride my bike. Almost impossible. If you've never ridden a bike drunk, it is not easy. It's it's difficult. So I only did that a couple times. But what I used to like to do was to get a nice buzz on, say, like a Sunday night when the roads were pretty empty, and I could stay out a little later than because at this point I was teaching from noon to 10 or whatever. I didn't have to get up in the mornings. And I would ride my bike with a slight buzz, listening to headphones on the empty streets of this metropolis that I lived in. But it was, I think I've described it before, it's like this little city with a bunch of huge buildings and stuff and bustling, typically. But on those Sunday nights, it was like virtually empty. And it was also in the middle of a rural area. So you'd be driving one block by towering apartment buildings, and then the next, you'd come across like a farm. And so I would ride my bike all listening to my headphones and just singing loud and probably disturbing some people who wanted to rest or relax. But man, oh man, I had fun. Just riding my bike. I remember in particular one night having a good buzz and riding my bike down an empty street and scream singing Pearl Jam's elderly woman behind a counter in a small town. And just, oh boy, oh boy. I mean, if I'm sure somebody looked out their window and saw that and went, boy, that's something. So anyway, I'm sad to report that my bike was eventually stolen. And, I was heartbroken. Heartbroken. I came down one morning to the bike rack outside the apartment complex. And my chain was still hanging there, snapped in half or cut in half. And the bike was gone. And bike thieves were rampant over there. In fact, when I bought that bike, I was told by a few people, well, when it gets stolen, you'll have to get a new one or whatever. And I was like, what do you mean? I've got a lock. It'll be fine. Nope. Got stolen. And you would see these pickup trucks every now and again driving down the road, and the backs of them would be piled high with bicycles. And the first time I saw one, I went, check that out. And somebody goes, yeah, those are the bike thieves. I was like, what? So they go around and they cut bikes off their chains, and they just throw them in their trucks, and people can just see that that's what they're doing. And they're like, yeah, nobody can really stop them because you can't. And then they would go to their like own garages or whatever and sell them. They would just kind of fix them up a little bit and resell them. So I would, you know, whenever I saw one of those trucks drive by, I'd go, is my bike on there? Nah, dang it. I didn't buy another one. I should have. By the time it got stolen, I knew I was only going to be there for another couple months, and I went, I guess I'll do without. But I wanted to buy a bike this past summer, but as a lot of you may know, it was almost impossible. Everybody else had the same idea, of course, which was, man, we can't really go anywhere, but we want to get out of the house. And so, bike sales were through the roof, which is terrific. But I did buy a bike, and I had it sent to my house. It needed assembly. I went, you know what? I've gotten fairly handy. I can put a bike together. My gosh, this thing, I spent 3 days on it. Not full days, of course, but a couple hours here, a couple hours there. I could not get this bike to work. I got it put together, but I couldn't figure it out, and I went, damn it, I guess I'm not as smart as I thought I was. And I took it to a bike shop, and they looked at it, and they said, we can't fix this thing. And I said, what? And they were like, well, it's missing a couple parts, and this thing's way broken. So you just got a shoddy bike. And, oh, okay. Part of me felt good that it wasn't me, that I had everything been where it was supposed to be, I would have been able to fix it or put it together. But so I had to send that back, and then I didn't trust getting a bike shipped to me. So I should go now. I should go now and look, because I would really love to have one again. I love it. Those first couple weeks, if you're not a consistent bike rider, I remember in Korea getting a bike and then riding it for a long time, and you feel it. I'll tell you that. There is some definite soreness as your body gets used to sitting on that seat. Boy, I mean, yeah. If I were to write a book about it, I think I would just call it Taint Pain, because that's what it was for a couple weeks there. What else is happening this week? Valentine's Day, of course, coming up on the 14th. And I'm going to talk a little bit about it because it's something, the something that I would like us to work on this week involves Valentine's Day. So let's get right to it. Here's what I would like for us to work on this week. Oh, why not celebrate? Maybe a little champagne. You got your best gal or your best guy by your side. Oh, you just had a nice dinner. Maybe you're going to dance it up a little bit. Oh, this sounds like a party. Valentine's Day. Well, here's what I'd like for all of us to work on this week. And it kind of, it can apply to other weeks, but it's very Valentine's, it's fairly Valentine specific. A couple things here, all right? If you are celebrating Valentine's Day with somebody that you love and care about, go easy on yourself, all right? Don't put so much pressure on yourself. Enjoy this. This shouldn't be a chore. This shouldn't be a hassle. And it shouldn't be something that makes you nervous. This should be a celebration of your love. And, of course, think about, you know, put some thought into a gift you'd like to give your Valentine. Think about what it is they like and how you can spoil them a little bit on that day. And, work within your budget. You don't have to go crazy. Just make it special. And special can be something, words that you tell them, or a card that you write them, or and of course a little gift. But don't get stressed out about it. That's not what this is about. Your Valentine, if he or she is a true Valentine, wouldn't want you to get stressed about it, all right? Just get what you need to get. Get what you'd like to get. And enjoy it. Enjoy the process of buying for your Valentine. That should be a fun, exciting thing. It shouldn't be stressful. So go easy on yourself this Valentine's Day, all right? Give yourself a little leeway. No pressure. You know what she likes. You know what he likes. Just get it or do it or say it. And if you're not celebrating with a Valentine this year, there's no reason why you can't celebrate still. You may not be in a relationship and you might be bummed about it. But if you're bummed about it, that means that you believe in relationships and you believe in love and you're just longing for it. So celebrate the love that you do have, that is around you. Maybe it's as simple as calling your parents on Valentine's Day and saying, you know what, you guys have been together for a while, and it's an inspiration to me, and I look forward to having that with somebody. There's nothing wrong with that. It's a really great thing to still, I've always loved Valentine's Day, regardless of whether I'm with somebody or not, because it's a celebration of love. Don't you love when you see people together and they're happy? Even if you're single, I don't know. Maybe it's tough for some people. It isn't for me. I love when people are in love. I think it's super cool, and it should be celebrated. And Valentine's Day can absolutely be celebrated alone. Spoil yourself. Give yourself a gift or get your favorite meal or go get a pedi or a mani or a massage or something. Treat yourself. And I'm going to say, let somebody who you love know that they're very special to you. And that. And yes, Valentine's Day is mostly romantic, so there's but it doesn't mean that you can't, that your daughter couldn't be your Valentine or your niece couldn't be your Valentine. It doesn't have to be romantic. It can be just about the love that you guys share. So that's what we'll work on this week, celebrating somebody else's love as well as your own if you've got it, all right? And trust me, if you're single right now and you don't have a Valentine per se, you are loved, all right? At the very least, you are loved by me. And, well, I mean, could you need anything else than that? Have a wonderful Chinese New Year and a very happy Valentine's Day.
What's up, guys? David Pollack here, former Georgia Bulldog, former analyst with College Game Day, and host of my new show, See Ball, Get Ball. I'm a defensive lineman. That's why that's the name. You see the ball, you go get it. We're going to dive deep into college football. We're going to break down film. We'll have bold takes, real conversations with the biggest names in the sport every single week. If you eat, sleep, and breathe college football like I do, man, I promise you, See Ball, Get Ball is for you. So do me a favor. Follow and listen on your favorite platform.